Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Episode 29, Unthinkable Betrayal. Tonight, we're on the case in Lakeland, Florida, about 35 miles east of Tampa. This working-class community was stunned when a single mother was found brutally murdered in her own home. The disturbing clues first pointed detectives to Linda Slayton's neighbors, and then to a serial predator. But when loved ones finally discovered who the killer really was, they were heartbroken. September 4th, 1981. It was a sunny Friday in Lakeland, Florida, and Judy Slayton was looking forward to spending time with her sister, Linda. Detective Brad Grice.
Judy had actually gone and knocked on the door to have coffee.
Detective Tammy Hathcock.
She wasn't able to get any type of a response.
Judy was puzzled. She and her sister had hung out at her apartment every morning since Linda and her two sons had moved in a few weeks before. As she was leaving, something odd caught her attention.
As she was walking away, she looked and saw that the screen was missing off of Linda's bedroom window, which she kind of felt like that was unusual.
Judy walked over to the window and peered inside.
She saw Linda lying on the bed with the wire coat hanger around her neck.
There was no doubt in Judy's mind that Linda was dead.
At that point in time, she obviously freaked out. A guy that was working in the area actually heard her screaming for help and then called 911.
Judy was hysterical as she waited for police to arrive. And her fear deepened as another disturbing question crossed her mind. Could her two young nephews be dead as well? When first responders arrived, they struggled to make entry to the apartment.
The doors were secured, so they ended up crawling in through the front window here.
Police were stunned when they entered the crime scene and found both of Linda's sons fast asleep and unharmed. Jeff Slayton, then just 15 years old, will never forget those surreal moments.
There was a cop. He told me to put on some clothes and go outside, and when I did, it looked like every cop in the state of Florida lives there. I didn't know what was going on.
Eventually, he spotted his aunt. She delivered the life-altering news.
My Aunt Judy was standing there crying. She'd say, my mom got murdered. It's a nightmare I wouldn't wish on anybody.
Jeff, already overwhelmed by grief, then realized his younger brother had not been accounted for.
Then I didn't see my brother Tim. He's 12. So I thought, well, maybe he's in the house murdered too.
To Jeff's relief, Tim Slayton walked out the front door seconds later. But the 12-year-old was in a state of shock. As he was ushered outside, he had caught a glimpse of his mother's lifeless body. Linda's son, Tim Slayton.
As I was going out the door, I saw the crime scene. I saw everything. A yellow coat hanger was around her neck, and there was blood everywhere.
While Tim, his brother, and their aunt held on to one another, trying to come to terms with Linda's violent death, investigators were busy attempting to make sense of the evidence. The condition of her body told detectives that she had endured a brutal sexual assault.
Her breasts were exposed, her dress was pulled up. There was a lot of blood, and then ultimately that wire hanger around her neck.
Based on the evidence, it appeared nearly all of the attack had happened on or around Linda's bed. Detective Russ Hurley.
She was hanging off the bed and her feet were above the rug. The rug was ruffled up.
As police surveyed the scene, they quickly ruled out robbery as a motive.
Her purse was still there. Everything was there. There's jewelry in a jewelry box on top of the dresser. It was completely undisturbed.
There's no really sign of any kind of staging, anything missing. So it appears to be strictly a sexual case.
As police studied the crime scene, they concluded that Linda was caught off guard and had no chance to defend herself.
Linda was described as being real scrappy. It was surprising for such a brutal crime that there wasn't more of a struggle.
Detectives were confident the killer's point of entry had been the open window her sister had initially noticed.
She was ambushed in the bedroom.
Right here is the window where the screen is missing, and that would have been where the suspect went in to her bedroom.
Unidentified fingerprints on the windowsill help confirm that theory.
You've got the headboard that's like right up against the window. The suspect went over that headboard. We believe that that's the point of entry.
Police also found a shoe impression on the pillowcase. And a trail of matching shoe impressions led to Linda's closet. Inside, police found several hangers that were identical to the murder weapon. The evidence told a disturbing story. It appeared that Linda's killer may have snuck into the house, hid in her closet, and waited until Linda was at her most vulnerable before he struck. That terrifying MO led police to a chilling conclusion.
I really thought that this person wouldn't stop until he was caught.
As detectives began their hunt for a cold-blooded killer, Linda's two sons now had to come to terms with the fact that their only parent was gone. As a single mother, she had provided everything that they needed growing up. Linda's son, Jeff Slayton.
A lot of times we didn't have a whole lot of food in the house, but she always seemed to have a nice meal on the table for us. I don't know how she did it, to be honest with you.
Jeff and Tim's father had been out of their lives for some time, leaving Linda as the sole provider. Although she was just 4 feet 10 inches tall and 90 pounds, Linda was bigger than life to her boys.
She was awesome. Everybody thought she was my older sister because she didn't look her age.
And Linda had many talents. Linda's son, Tim Slayton.
She loved to draw. She loved to dance. She made her own clothes.
Both Jeff and Tim remember her as the type of parent most of their friends envied.
She was cool. I mean, we'd go to like concerts, the beach, the parks. We always wanted to go have fun. That's what she was about, was having fun.
Every day, Tim saw just how difficult his mother's life was trying to make ends meet while keeping him and his older brother in line.
It was her life. I'm sure when she took her last breath, that's what was on her mind.
But no matter how tough it got, Linda kept a positive attitude.
She's always happy and she never met a stranger. She would talk to anybody. She just loved living life, you know, just spontaneous in a moment.
Tim and Jeff's sense of loss only deepened over time, and the gruesome details of their mother's murder added to their pain.
This is the wire hanger that was actually taken off of Linda's neck. the medical examiner actually notated that there was claw marks on Linda's neck where she struggled to try to pull it away.
Biological evidence was recovered confirming that Linda had been the victim of a violent sexual assault. As news of the terrifying crime spread through the community, so did a wave of fear.
This was a brand new apartment complex, and Linda and her two boys had only been there for a couple of weeks. For something like this to happen, everybody was up in arms.
Most believed that Linda's killer was still in the area, perhaps getting ready to destroy another family. After the murder, Jeff Slayton lived in a perpetual state of fear.
I was constantly looking over my shoulder and never trusted nobody. I slept with a switchblade knife stuck under the pillow.
Investigators went to work trying to identify a suspect. They hoped piecing together Linda's last moments alive might lead them to one. Tim Slayton had gotten home from football practice around 8:30, and he and his mother had a quiet night in the neighborhood.
The neighbors who lived in the duplex right beside us was having a get-together with like three other couples.
They played cards and enjoyed the night.
Linda's older son, Jeff, had been with his grandparents. They brought him home at around 9:30. Linda and Tim got in around 11:30. Linda began straightening up the apartment as the boys got ready for bed.
She was washing dishes and stuff, and I told her I love her, and that was the last time I seen her.
Investigators asked the boys if it was possible that Linda had left the apartment after they went to sleep. Jeff told them that there was no way, since he would have heard her open the front door.
My bed was in the living room, close to the door.
Jeff fell asleep just after midnight. He told police he never heard any struggle, even though his mother was just steps away in her bedroom. For police, that could only mean one thing. The killer had most likely been watching the home that night.
She was definitely targeted.
They also believed that whoever had murdered Linda had to have been familiar with the layout of the home.
They had to know where the sons would be at. They had to know that they could enter through that window.
Nearly all of the apartments in the complex had a similar layout. That made many of Linda's neighbors potential suspects. Police zeroed in on the men who had been at the party that Linda and Tim had attended.
Obviously, that was the first place to try to eliminate people.
Investigators were confident that the killer was already in the apartment before Linda returned from the party. Then he waited for Linda to get undressed and ready for bed. Police collected shoe impressions and fingerprints from anyone without an airtight alibi.
They would get their prints and do the comparisons. They drew their blood and got hair samples.
But none of the partygoers was a match to the physical evidence police had collected. Detectives then widened their search outside of Linda's neighborhood.
They found her ex-husband. They had a pretty toxic relationship. He had made threats to harm her.
Linda had left Alabama and returned to her Florida roots to get away from him.
Once they moved to Lakeland, he had sent letters over about how she ruined his life.
Police wondered if that rage had finally reached the point where it led to action. But when they tracked down Linda's ex for questioning, the facts quickly eliminated him. He was miles away in another state.
He was in Alabama. He didn't know that she even lived in this apartment complex.
It turned out that the letters he had sent had been mailed to Linda's parents. Still, police collected fingerprints from Linda's ex-husband. They were not a match. Detectives were now back to square one, with a deadly sexual predator still on the loose. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. If you're busy like I am, you don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about what you're going to wear day to day. You want it to be effortless. But that doesn't mean you have to give up comfort or style. You just need everything in your closet to work. It makes getting dressed simpler. That's why Quince is one of my new go-tos. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything works without overthinking it. Quince makes pieces that feel as good as they look because they use premium materials. Lightweight pants, dresses, and tops start at just $30. In fact, everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And you can buy for the whole family. I'm planning to stock up on baby clothes for my grandchildren. I can hardly wait to see just how cute they'll look in those outfits. Refresh your everyday with luxury. Head to quince.com/OTCpod for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/OTCpod for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/OTCpod. As detectives continued their search for Linda's killer, a new man in her life was brought to their attention. His name was Bobby Dean. Police learned that Bobby and Linda had been in a relationship that had recently ended. Detective Tammy Hathcock.
She had dated him for a little while when she was here in Lakeland.
In fact, they had broken up just before Linda was murdered.
It was actually 2 days before the murder.
The timing of the split and Dean's hot temper moved him into the investigation spotlight. Friends and family told investigators that Linda had ended the relationship because Dean had become too possessive. Detective Brad Grice.
Linda had been complaining to friends about his jealousy.
Police brought Bobby Dean in for questioning. He promptly gave them an alibi for the night of the murder.
He said that he was at his house with his sister and his mother.
But neither could say for sure that Dean hadn't left the house after they went to bed. Without a solid alibi, police asked him to take a polygraph. Although he agreed, the test didn't clear his name.
The results were inconclusive.
Investigators offered Dean the chance to take a second polygraph.
He failed to show up for that.
At that point, Dean refused to cooperate. But in the end, police discovered that the physical evidence was not a match to Bobby Dean.
At some point in time, they did end up going down a different path.
The new path investigators chose led them to take a closer look at puzzling questions surrounding Linda's 15-year-old son, Jeff, who said he had slept through the attack.
Police were pretty surprised that Jeff didn't hear anything just because his bed was right there next to his mom's bedroom wall.
Detectives discovered that Jeff had been a rebellious teenager who often was at odds with his mother. Detective Russ Hurley.
He was considered a suspect because him and his mom had this pretty aggressive relationship. They were constantly at each other.
She was very frustrated with him. She was complaining that Jeff was getting to be uncontrollable.
In fact, the two had a heated disagreement just hours before the crime.
She had left some food out and he wanted to eat it as soon as he got home, but she wanted to wait until Tim got home from football practice.
She told him, if you don't like it, hit the door, and he did. He went out and jumped on his bicycle and went to his grandparents' house.
Jeff returned around 9:30 and was waiting for Linda when she got home. By his own account, he was the last person to see his mother alive. Investigators asked him over and over again about that final encounter. Linda's son, Jeff Slayton.
She just said, I love you, Jeff, and good night. We never went to bed mad.
Detectives weren't as certain. They pressed Jeff about why he hadn't come to his mother's aid.
I've been so hard on myself my whole life that I didn't hear that. I should have heard something. I should have been there to save my mom.
Police remained unconvinced, especially when they learned something else about the teenager.
He had been known to go through that particular window that was open in her bedroom. This window was generally left unlocked or open, and when he would come home and the doors were locked, he would just remove the screen, climb in, go unlock the door, go back around and put the screen back.
Although there were a lot of red flags, there was no evidence that tied Jeff to his mother's murder. Despite that, police still weren't able to cross him off their list as a potential suspect in the investigation.
They were not able to clear him.
Which meant there was always a cloud of suspicion following him.
So embarrassing. Friends of mine, like, ooh, you know, I was getting taken out of class again. It was all, I'm not exaggerating. It was a good 25 or 30 times. They didn't want to put me under hypnosis. One cop said, yeah, you're big, strong. Put your hands around your mom's neck and kill her.
For a teenager, the agony that caused was unimaginable.
I was just a typical 15-year-old kid. I'm like, my God, did they think I did it? You know, he was hurting, and they're just making more pain on me.
Investigators pushed the teenager for months, but couldn't find anything connecting Jeff to the brutal attack.
Ultimately, he passed a polygraph.
Still, those difficult days took a toll on Jeff Slayton. He dropped out of high school and became deeply depressed.
There was a couple of times I almost committed suicide, but all the hell I went through.
And those dark thoughts were compounded when the investigation into his mother's murder began to go cold.
There was no witnesses. They weren't able to link anybody with fingerprints. They weren't getting any new information.
And many feared that Linda Slayton's murder would never be solved. Linda's son, Tim Slayton.
I wouldn't say I gave up hope, but I was getting close to thinking I'd never, you know, take my last breath on who killed my mom.
Jeff felt the same way his brother did. After his mom's death, he had a hard time letting anyone get close to him.
I always had my head on a swivel, and anybody acted funny, I was ready for him. I was really, really worried that I was like friends with him, being nice to the dirtbag that murdered my mom, and it really bothered me. Just the not knowing is the absolute worst.
The years started to pass, and then Two decades after Linda Slayton's murder, advances in DNA technology led to the discovery of critical new evidence.
Florida Department of Law Enforcement were able to develop a full profile.
Investigators immediately sent in samples from all of the original suspects for testing.
I started going back to the original people detectives had collected blood from, and we were sending it off to compare to DNA.
But none of the suspects in the case file was a match.
It was just one dead end after the next.
Although the testing sent investigators back to square one, it was an important moment for Linda's son, Jeff. For the first time since his mother's murder, he was publicly cleared of any role in the crime.
I always like to think of my mom looking down on me from heaven, and I want her to be proud of what she looks at down here. I think she would be proud.
That moment was important for Jeff in another way as well. When he sat down with the new lead detective on the case, Brad Grice, he discovered they already had a bond.
I knew him from bowling back in 88. He was going to the police academy and learned how to be a cop, and then I didn't see him for a long time. I guess he's working the streets at night. And we used to be two of the best bowlers around for a long time.
The detective immediately recognized Jeff as well.
I realized that I'd known Jeff for a number of years.
After that first meeting, their friendship continued to grow.
I'd go down there probably 2 to 3 times a month, all the time. You know, hey, what's going on with my mom? What have you done for mom? I know a lot of people by name. I got a lot of the cops' personal cell numbers. We all become friends over the years.
He would constantly come up to the police department. He made me promise I wouldn't leave the police department until I solved his mother's case.
Jeff believed Detective Grice was the man to do it.
But I could tell Brad Grice, he really wanted to solve, you know, for our friendship and what my poor mom went through. And I actually named my son after him. I only had one son. I named him Brad. Because I could tell how much he wanted to solve the case.
Then, in 2001, Detective Grice got a lead on a convicted felon that jump-started the investigation.
He made contact with the Polk County Sheriff's Office detectives, and they had told him about James Ulmer.
James Ulmer's crimes had been disturbingly similar to Linda Slayton's murder.
He had entered a residence, strangled and raped a girl.
He had gone in through a window of a young girl's bedroom, kidnapped her, and sexually battered her.
She survived and was able to identify him.
The crime had occurred less than 10 miles away from Linda's apartment. The detective was intrigued.
Some of the stuff with him certainly threw up flags, made me real interested in knowing more about Jimmy Ulmer.
And that level of interest grew as Detective Grice dug deeper.
The friend of Ulmer's lived in that apartment complex right across the street from Linda Slayton. Jimmy Ulmer was in that apartment the night that Linda was killed.
Investigators zeroed in on Ulmer and believed they were just a DNA swab away from solving the case. But there was a major hurdle to that plan.
It was a little more difficult than you would think because Jimmy died in prison and he was cremated.
Even more problematic was the fact that Ulmer's DNA had never been collected while he was behind bars.
I went back to the Polk County Sheriff's Department in hopes of getting some evidence from their cases that would have Jimmy Ulmer's DNA, but because the case had been disposed of, So had the evidence.
But Detective Grice was relentless. He ultimately convinced Ulmer's own mother to volunteer a DNA sample. Her swab was sent in for comparison to the crime scene evidence. The results were shocking.
He was actually eliminated through his mother's DNA.
It was a major setback for the investigation. And the case was suddenly in familiar territory once again.
Back to where we started, cold.
Oh my God, we're back to square one again. We thought that was going to be the end of it.
Detective Grice went back to work entering the killer's DNA profile into the CODIS national database.
We weren't getting any hits from there. So I was starting to feel that the case was going to be extremely hard to figure out.
The realization left Detective Grice and his investigation at a crossroads. He had to face the very real possibility that whoever had committed this crime had gotten away with murder.
That was very troublesome.
Detective Brad Grice retired from the sheriff's office in 2015 after having worked on Linda's case for 17 years.
I worked a lot of cases over the years, but this one I carried. You know, it was just one that I carried with me the whole time. I felt like I'd let Jeff and Tim down. It was very disappointing.
Jeff and Tim had already known that justice for their mother was delayed. Now it appeared to be denied.
It was like a roller coaster. We think it's this guy, and it was not. And, you know, years go by, and they go, we think it's this guy, and it's not.
When Detective Brad Grice retired, it broke my heart.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. After decades of pain, Tim and Jeff Slayton had all but given up hope that their mother's murder would be solved. Then, in 2017, a new team of investigators dusted off the case file.
Detective Tammy Hathcock. I was 5 years old when this happened. So this has been sitting there for so long, and we haven't been able to establish who this DNA belongs to.
And every viable suspect that police had looked at had already been cleared. Even investigators began to doubt whether they would ever find Linda's killer.
But there was days that I just remember thinking, man, am I ever going to be able to bring the killer to justice for Linda?
Despite those doubts, investigators remained focused on the physical evidence.
The coat hanger around her neck had been tested. Fingerprints had been established.
But so far, those prints had not led to a suspect either. Still, there was new hope on the horizon at the FDLE Crime Lab. Detective Russ Hurley.
They were getting into genetic genealogy testing, so we submitted the case.
Genealogy experts were able to find a matching family tree in public DNA databases, and they traced the branches down to a single suspect.
Joseph Mills.
Investigators were stunned. The name sounded familiar.
I actually went back through the file because I remember seeing that name.
And Detective Hathcock was right. She located the report mentioning Joseph Mills in the case file.
I ran down the hallway with that paper in my hand and said, oh my God, he was interviewed. He is involved in this case. They spoke to him in 1981.
As Detective Hathcock and her colleagues read the document, a terrifying picture suddenly came into focus. The report identified Joseph Mills as young Tim Slayton's football coach. And even more chilling was the final detail in the report. Mills had dropped off the 12-year-old at home just hours before Linda was murdered. Detective Hathcock was shocked when she heard the news.
It was probably one of the best moments because we knew there was some connection.
There's the connection. There's the guy that would have known the layout because he was in and out of that apartment complex constantly while he was coaching. He had spoke to her.
It was exciting, but detectives knew they still had to proceed with cautious optimism.
You can't get too excited with these things because when you work in these cases, there's a lot of highs and a lot of lows. But obviously, you hope that this is a good lead and it bears fruit.
Investigators immediately began a deep dive into their new prime suspect.
I learned that he was a native of Lakeland. He was still alive. He actually still lived in the same location he was living at during the time of the murder.
As they dug into his criminal history, they learned something interesting.
We had actually arrested him in 1984 for a grand theft.
Detective Hathcock was intrigued. The arrest meant that police had Joseph Mills' fingerprints on file.
I immediately submitted his fingerprints.
Police compared the prints to the ones found on Linda's windowsill. The results were shocking.
When that came back as a match, then we really got excited.
Investigators went to Mills' home to question him.
Hey, Mr. Mills? Yes. I'm Detective Hathcock. This is my partner. We get to come in?
Sure. Mills told detectives he didn't know Linda Slayton and didn't remember coaching her son, Tim, either.
He said he did remember coaching. He didn't remember any of the players. He didn't know her, never been in her house.
Investigators listened intently as Mills' denials backed him into a corner.
In my mind, I was like, we got him. We know that that's not the truth. We have this DNA. We have these fingerprints.
Unaware that he was now the prime suspect in Linda's murder, Mills continued to lie to investigators.
He was really just cool, calm, and collected, like he didn't have a worry in the world.
When Mills was taken into custody, he never even asked police why.
If somebody was to come to your house, put you in handcuffs, and put you in the back of a police car, you would want to know, what is going on? Why am I being arrested? But he knew what we were truly there for.
In the interrogation room, Mills' demeanor slowly changed as investigators showed him the overwhelming evidence they had compiled.
Your fingerprints were found there at the scene, inside her apartment, okay? So explain to me how your fingerprints got inside of her apartment.
I don't know. I do not recall being in her apartment.
Mills' answers to the toughest questions ultimately sealed his fate.
Do you recall having sex with her?
No, ma'am.
Investigators then revealed the DNA evidence that proved he was lying, and Mills suddenly cracked.
The ball started rolling at that point in time.
Mills then tried to get detectives to believe a bizarre news story, one they viewed as a desperate attempt to explain away the evidence.
Ultimately, he admitted to going in through the window. He said when he got there, she was standing there and already had the hanger around her neck.
She had the hanger.
And you're telling me that she was just waiting there with a hanger on the back of her neck?
Yes.
He wanted to make it seem like it was her idea, and we shot down those things. Those were lies.
By the end of the interview, Mills confessed that it was he who wrapped the wire hanger around Linda's neck.
He admitted to tightening the wire hanger down on her neck to the point that she was completely unconscious and not moving.
At what point in time did it get to the point where she died?
I didn't know she died.
She was bleeding with that around her neck, and you did not know that she was dead, and you left her there, and you went about your business for 38 years.
Mills' own words made detectives confident they had the right guy.
It was enough to say that he's the one that did this.
Investigators saw Mills as a monster, a man who simply climbed out of Linda's window and never gave his hideous crime a second thought.
At no point in time did that man show any remorse. It was crazy.
Mills was charged with the murder of Linda Slayton. The news was both a relief and a devastating blow for her two sons. Linda's son, Tim Slayton.
I'll never forget the assistant district attorney looked at me and she goes, "Tim, your coach killed your mom." And I just fell back in the chair. You know, I was in shock. This is somebody I was supposed to look up to. He's my coach, you know?
After Linda's murder, Mills had masqueraded as a friend, often giving the young boy rides to their football games. Detective Brad Grice.
That is a sickening thought, that somebody in that position would actually drop Tim off, and then he was the person that actually came back and murdered his mother. And then what's more sickening is to learn that he continued to pick up Tim and drop him off even after the murder.
Tim Slayton remembers those trips. Mills had often inquired about the police investigation into his mother's death. At the time, the questions had seemed innocent.
A lot of the coaches would ask me, you know, every practice, or, you know, what's going on with your mom's case? And I'd be like, nothing yet, you know, they're still looking.
He trusted his coach and never thought anything of it. In fact, Tim had even hung a team photo of him with Mills on his wall.
The killer's been in my house this whole time. I never had a clue.
As Tim thought about Mills' deception, his shock turned into a simmering rage.
I was like, let me have him now. And a cop sitting across the table, he goes, "Son, I wish we could, but we can't."
In the end, Mills spared himself and Linda's family a trial. He pled guilty to her murder and was given a life sentence. It was the first time the Slayton brothers had been face-to-face with Mills in years. Linda's son, Jeff Slayton.
There was nothing in him. He's got these cold, black, murdering eyes and no expression whatsoever, no heart. He's heartless.
Truthfully, I just wanted to reach out and kill him. I mean, every time I looked at him, I got so angry. I had so much rage going on. I remember there was a big bailiff. And when I was sitting there, he looked down at me, he goes, "Don't start nothing." I was like, "I'm not. I'm good."
Even though Mills will likely die in prison, it still doesn't seem like enough of a punishment to Tim.
Thinking about now, he got to live his life. You know, he raised a family, he's got kids and grandkids, you know, had a job, had his own business. So he got to live most of his life.
For Tim and Jeff Slayton, the verdict closed an agonizing chapter of their lives. But it also left so many painful questions unanswered.
Well, we get to have our words with them. I try my best to get them to tell me why. Why'd you have to murder my mom, Joe? And it just broke my heart. He just sat there and didn't say a word.
I still like to know why, because he's never said why he did it. We still can't get that answer from this man.
And police can only speculate about what really happened that night.
I think he made up his mind that he was going to go over there and rape her. He went in through the window. He hid in her closet. And I think when she came into the bedroom, he accosted her.
I think that he thought she was vulnerable. I mean, she's 4'10", 90 pounds. He believed that he could take advantage of this single mom. And ultimately, that's what he did.
Tim and Jeff are grateful for the incredible work of law enforcement. But the price they have paid for Mills' brutality is nearly incalculable.
He stole my childhood from me. I didn't get to go to high school and have high school memories. I didn't have none. I didn't get to have none of that. So I wound up dropping out of school because the cops would come down there harassing me all the time. And I didn't have my mom around, didn't have my dad around. Thank God I had great grandparents, but I didn't get to have none of those great memories going to high school.
Jeff believes the course of his life was forever changed the day his mother was murdered.
No, the day he murdered my mom, he murdered my childhood. I think it was the last day me and my brother were kids.
Tim shares those sentiments.
It took my mom away, but he took our youth away. We had to grow up a lot faster after that. Me and my brother both dropped out of school. Made it very hard for us.
Despite everything they've gone through, Linda's sons try to focus their energy on remembering the good things about their mother and how much she loved them.
I got pictures all in my house. There's a candle I burn on her birthdays and stuff in my house. It's got little lights and stuff in it. I go down to the cemetery when I can and always clean it up around there and make sure all the grass ain't on it and stuff. But just think about the good times, you know?
She meant the world to me. You only had her for 12 years. You can't take life for granted. That's why I tell my daughter every day, I love you.
During Mills' sentencing hearing, Jeff Slayton was finally able to release decades of pent-up rage, telling his mother's killer, quote, "You can't die and burn in hell fast enough for me." Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.